It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes up off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 20 years.
Open at the 35, racing to the 20, 10, touchdown Raiders.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
All right, welcome back to our final hour here of the week on the flagship of the Raiders, Raider Nation Radio. Bobby and I in studio waiting, wink, wink, for any breaking news, part of our job, or what's going to happen here. I don't think anything. We're going to get into our final hour. There's a lot more I want to cover here before I thank all our proud partners. Heading to the Syracuse-UNLV game. I could say UNLV-Syracuse game. I'm not a passion for Syracuse, a passion for Syracuse basketball. I went to college in upstate New York, and we went to a lot of Syracuse games, a lot. And as I've said over the years, if you've listened, Jim Brown, the greatest of Syracuse, the greatest, was an unbelievable mentor and friend of mine. And, you know, probably my biggest athlete accomplishment of my career is the relationship I built with Jim Brown, who played at Syracuse, and Al Davis, Mr. Davis, going to Syracuse, and plus all the Raiders who played there. I'd like to see UNLV win. I live in Vegas. Former players, great friends who went to UNLV. My next door neighbor is a former UNLV quarterback. I'd like to see the Rebels win this game, build on the crowd, get more fans to show up, and turn this town into a Division I football town. Let me repeat. You got to draw more at UNLV than Tulsa. You have to draw more than Tulane. You should draw more than Ole Miss. I know Ole Miss is in the SEC. They're in Oxford. I've never been to Oxford. I've been to Vegas. And Vegas has casino lined up at the casino. This town has got to get more asses in seats. Now a top 25 team, they win. If they win big, more fans show up. Open up the second and third deck. Act like a Division I football town. Pay players like a Division I football town. Big test. Absolutely big test. It's also a big test for the Silver and Black. This week started off, it feels like it's a lot longer of a week than I was planning on it. For the Devontae Adams news, it started with me on Wednesday interviewing the head coach, and this was interesting. I knew he was coming into the building. We knew he was going to talk to us. He was aware we were going to ask him about Devontae, not only myself, but the media downstairs, and he really didn't bite on it for a lot of reasons. He's got a game coming up against Denver. Here's my conversation with the head coach, Antonio Pierce. Welcome in, head coach Antonio Pierce. So, coach, let's begin with the current status of Devontae Adams.
Yeah, I mean, he's working through an injury and hamstring, and we'll see how that goes.
With all the media coverage surrounding this story, what have you instructed your players as they meet the media and prepare for the Broncos?
Yeah, focus on the Broncos. That's our biggest worry right now, winning a divisional game on the road, coming off a great home win with our crowd, and again, expecting Raider Nation to be in Denver.
152 yards rushing. That's what we've been talking about in this room for a while. What clicked? What'd you see on tape?
I thought a really good job by our coaches. Creative ways to get other guys involved. I mean, you saw a receiver in the backfield. Mm-hmm. You saw a receiver carry a reverse. You saw a jet sweep by a tight end. Yeah. And then our two backs did an outstanding job. But I think more importantly, man, I got to give it to these guys up front. I thought the guys up front, our tight ends, our receivers, all 11, especially the O-line, though, they were finishing, they were straining. You saw guys finishing at the pile. We had Jackson Powers jumping over piles. I thought the energy, the effort, the strain, I thought the physicality as the game went on really showed up for us.
I thought it was a great wrinkle to have two receivers score with the ball rushing.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, great call, right? Down there in the red zone, kind of breaking some tendencies there. You're probably, you know, doing some, you know, scouting reports and self-scouting on us. But I thought a really good job. Again, I'm just going back to the perimeter. When you do anything with a reverse, say gadget type plays, the perimeter blocking is key. And right. Trey Tucker, how big is he again? What other day? He was 6'3", like 220.
6'3", 220 sounds right.
That's how he acts. You know, right. He had his big boy pads on the other day and blocking there for DJ Turner. And then those guys returned the favor for him. But I thought those guys did an outstanding job. Look, we got two speedy receivers there, right? And then put McAllister back there as well. We gave him a toss. That showed up on film. So I thought just overall, you know, the players, you know, the coaches, the scheme, that all came to fruition.
What about Jacoby embracing the number one, and he's going to get doubled here, the way he looked in that game, and his leadership, too. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think we've all said it, you know, quietly, you know, this guy's got something to him. Mm-hmm. You know, we've heard players on our team speak about Jacoby, but I think the unselfishness of Jacoby is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. There's a clip. The ball's going the other direction, and he hits Myles Garrett, puts him down. And Myles looks at him like, who the hell just hit me? It's Jacoby Myers. And put him on the ground, right, on his side, on his backside. And what Jacoby's able to do, man, run after the catch, the ability to block. We've seen him throw the ball. I mean, you really got to ask yourself, what can he not do? And he's an ultimate team player.
I know you want to get Brock in the end zone, and we've talked about red zone efficiency. In that game, that was a war. That was a battle. Getting down there was tough. We'll get to your defense in a second. What about Bowers and the way he's playing and trying to get him more touches in the end zone?
Yeah, we did. I mean, I know he wants the first one back.
Yeah.
Right? He dropped it, and it was a big game there for us. But that's good to see a rookie respond that way. And I thought it was a really good job by Luke Getsy to follow that up with giving him a jet sweep, right? Yeah. Get him going. And then I think everybody saw what we've been seeing all training camp and all season long, a guy that when he has a ball in his hand, he's like a running back.
Mm-hmm.
He runs behind his pads and runs through tackles. But I think Brock, to his credit, and Harrison Bryant as well, I thought those two gentlemen, you know, played an outstanding game for us. And just, again, just the production. Again, we always talk about receptions and all the stuff that shows up on the stat line. It's all those other things. There's a play, again, on a toss crack where we get a ball to McAllister, and Brock's guy is in the end zone, 15 yards down the field. He is driving him down the field in his field, and then you see Harrison Bryant doing the same thing, driving his guys out of bounds. So, you know, it's all those things that don't show up on the stats sheet that really showed up in this game.
Defense, Adam Butler. Now, I don't look at stats really until week four because they're trends and now they become stats. Wow, what you got out of him and Christian in the middle, and then touch on Tyree because PFF looks at numbers, but we saw the bull rush and we saw him chasing the other side. That's what I want to get into.
Yeah, man, listen, Adam Butler delivered, and we do it every Friday or Saturday, you know, have somebody speak to the team. And Adam Butler did that, and it set the tone. Like normally, you know, I did it just like today. I set the mindset, you know, how we're going to win, the keys to victory. But then he had a message, and it resonated with, you know, amongst our team, our coaches, and I kind of use that throughout the weekend. We've been seeing that play. That the same play he made on that screen, he did against Baltimore. He's done consistently. He's always running the ball, his effort. Another unselfish player. And I think the key when you put him and Adam and Christian Wilkins inside, the middle push that we got, you know, that pressure that we was allowing to our edges to get there, not to allow Deshaun to step up at times, especially in critical on that fourth and three to make those plays on the perimeter, I thought was huge for us. And it was really good, man, to see Tyree finally like get off the rock. You saw a different look in his eyes.
Yeah,
and again, no Max Crosby, right? We lost our superhero, and everybody else stepped up. We talked about that next man up mentality, and they really bought into it.
I want to follow up with Adam. How do you choose that player? Was it a feel or just, hey, this is the opponent, what he's going to have to do? That'll change from week to week?
Yeah, it's changed. It's coaches. I mean, it could be anybody in the building.
Okay.
And I just kind of ask people, you know, and hopefully for most of the time they're in all our team meetings, so they kind of hear the message. And I said, listen, however you spill it and however you want to go about it, just give us something, right? Give me some words of advice and wisdom, stories, wherever it may be. We don't know what's coming. I don't know what's coming.
You don't know.
And with Adam Butler, just I looked at him throughout the week, and it was Wednesday, Thursday. I'm like, and I went to him Thursday afternoon after practice and say, would you mind speaking to the team? And listen, he knocked out the park.
Let's move to Denver. They were staring 0-3. They beat Baker Mayfield and Aaron Rodgers back-to-back on the road. Right. Something happened with them where it clicked. I mean, Bo Nix only had 60 yards passing, and they beat the Jets. So you know Sean Payton. You competed against him as a player, now as a coach. Give me what you're seeing with the Denver Broncos over those last two road wins.
Defense.
Yeah.
Defense. Vance Joseph, he got those guys. He got them rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Play up front, a lot of movement, pressure. You're going to see, man, Patrick Surtain. He'll travel probably more likely with our best receivers and see those matchups there. But you're going to see a lot of pressure from them. They're stout. They're stingy. They're bringing a bunch of heat. And then I think he's doing a really good job with Bo Nix on the offensive side, Sean Payton. You know, you could tell he's running what he's comfortable with. There's not a lot on his plate, but they're very efficient. For the most part, taking care of the football, and they want to run, right? All his teams always want to run. They put up numbers because they had Drew Brees. But he always does a good job of running the ball and setting the tone at the line of scrimmage. That's going to be key for us this week.
Yeah, I think it's interesting with Bo because you had a look at him. He was there in the draft, was one pick away there. So as you evaluated him, what did you see? Arm strength, legs, his smarts? Because he's their franchise guy now that Russell Wilson's gone.
Yeah, it was good. We even brought him in for 30 visits, interviewed him at the combine, so spent a lot of time with him. I know him back from college, recruiting him as well. You know, he's a leader. He's a winner. He's played a lot of football. He has a certain, you know, aura about himself that people believe in. And you can see that. And you can see that when the game's on the line, the kid's not flinching. I mean, look, to go like he did last week in bad weather in New York versus Aaron Rodgers and you know, take care of the football and put the team in position to win, that's a credit to him.
Zach Allen, 23 pressures. That leads the NFL in the interior. He looks like he could be a problem here. You got to focus on him, too.
Yeah, it's going to be critical this week. You know, the interior rush, those three guys, are, excuse me, our interior offensive linemen, you know, with Jackson and Andre James, and again, you know, depending on what's going on with our guard situation, just those guys really taking care of the middle. You know, Colton Miller, you know, look like it'll be DJ Glaze more than likely again this week, and just those guys working together. And I think we're trying to find the right match up front, right? Who's the, you know, what's that continuity look like? Who's the best five that we can match up and gel with in a run game and a passing game for us to be successful? And I'm looking forward to the challenge, because last week was a big challenge.
Right.
That was a really good defense, line that we went up against, against the Cleveland Browns. And for the most part, we did what we needed to do when we needed to do it.
I want to end with your quarterback as you continue to evaluate him and where you're at with the quarterback position here, because this is a big game on the road. And we saw the early road game, especially the win in Baltimore, as the quarterback really played well down the stretch to get your win.
Yeah, I mean, listen, month into it, right? We got four games, and that's typically what the NFL goes off of, right? Four games. So we did a lot of self-scouting this over the last couple of days and things we need to clean up, and Gardner understand that as well. I think, you know, what would you like for to see with him more is just the command, the leadership, you know, making those throws. We had some opportunities last week that he wants back, I want back, the team wants back, and we got to make those plays. But more importantly, just don't turn the ball over.
Right.
Give us a chance, right? Keep the ball. It always ends up in the Raiders' hands. If we can do that, we'll be fine.
Raider fans travel to Denver. It's very hostile. I just want to end on the rivalry. Yeah. All right, there's been eight in a row. We know that. You're on the road. You're 2-2. This is a big pivot game to get one there. Just this rivalry with the Broncos, since you've come to the Raiders, it's different than Kansas City and the Chargers. Yeah. What do you think about this organization when you play them?
Yeah, first and foremost, we're not going to talk about being 8-0. We're 0-0 this year against that team, and we got to go out and do a great job of handling the crowd noise. They'll be excited, especially with two wins on the road back home now. So we have to deal with the crowd noise offensively, be good. But it's one of those things where, you know, you look, Kansas City, like, no, it's this team. You know what I mean? It's Sean Payton. It's the way this team is set up. It's the history of it, you know, especially back in the 90s when they were rolling, and the Raiders in the 80s. Yeah. I mean, there's been some bloodbath games, right? Yeah. And I know over the last, you know, few years, it's kind of went in our favor, and that's great. But we got to do it this year in 2024, and that's our mindset.
Good luck, Coach.
Thank you.
So that was an interesting one. One that I won't forget. I've interviewed every coach in the history of my run here over 27 years, and that was one of the more unique conversations we've had. I asked him the question. I had the follow-up. He went downstairs. He was asked. He was not going there with Devontae. It was hamstring, and we're ready to go. We're ready to go play Denver. Now, will he talk more about it in the future? If there's a decision with Devontae, obviously he will. But there's a lot going on here in the building, as you know. There was a lot going on this week. Q's got it covered. We had Vic Taper on here in the first hour. Everybody who's aware of what's going on here. And in the position I'm in, when I'm in this, if a coach is going to sit down with you and answer a couple of questions or do 9-10 minutes with you, you got to be ready to talk football. He wanted to talk football, which is fine. When we come back to Rich Gannon interview, which I really like. We're going to play that every Friday, most likely. Bobby says it's good to go. And again, his comments after the win against Cleveland, and he'll dive into Denver and what's going right. And we're going to end the show today with a portion of my conversation with Pete Rose. My friend Pete Rose passed away this week. Bobby found an interview I did with Pete not too long ago. I want to hear Pete's voice one more time as we continue. Tito's Handmade Vodka, proud partner of our show. Had a few Tito's last night with Mark Jones, the head of the Black Hole at the top of Fountain Blue, the Poodle Club. Never, ever, I had a tour of it when they opened the Fountain Blue. I've never, never, never been in a room like that in my life. From New York City to London to Rome, I've been all over the world, and I've never seen a room like the roof of the Fountain Blue. Thanks to the Black Hole for inviting me last night, and Mark Jones. What a night as we continue on the flagship of the Silver and Black. This is Raider Nation Radio. JT, welcome back, everybody, as we continue on. Pete Rose died earlier this week. I got a podcast out that I just did yesterday by myself on Pete, but I wanted to hear his voice one more time. My conversation, or a portion of it, second half of it, with the all-time hit king, Pete Rose. What an exciting day today. It's my honor to welcome in the all-time hit king on his birthday. with a big announcement. My friend, the great Pete Rose. Pete, happy birthday. Thanks for doing this. How are you, my friend?
Rick, it's always a pleasure being on your show. I enjoy listening to you simply because you have the knowledge, you have the delivery, and you don't bull crap around. You get right to the point, which is really good these days for a reporter or someone that's doing interviews. I appreciate being on your show. We work together. We know each other. We trust each other. And that's why we'll have a good interview today.
Absolutely. You know, I think the world of you. You gave me one of the biggest breaks in my career. But before we get into baseball, tell me about your birthday, your family, your loved ones, this milestone. How you feeling?
Well, I'm over in L.A., and, of course, I did dinner last night, and I'm doing dinner tonight. And then I'll drive back to Vegas, where I live, over there behind Aria. And it's just another day, Jay, because my family's spread out. My daughter's in Seattle. My son and daughter are in Cincinnati. And my other son is in Vegas, so with his two boys. So, you know, I don't get to see the family as much as I'd like to. But every time I get the opportunity, I see my kids or my grandkids.
Pete Rose joins us. So I'm thinking of you last night. I'm on the air, and there's a doubleheader with the Mets and the Phillies. It's a seven-inning doubleheader, seven innings. So one game ends in the seventh inning. The other game ends in the eighth inning. When those games are over, I turn on the Giant game. That game's in the ninth inning. Pete, how are fans supposed to understand when they're switching channels like you do, an unbelievable fan, what inning the game is? If it's a doubleheader or seven innings, I think this is insanity for the fans to keep track of.
I agree with you, Brick. I mean, you know, I'm the biggest baseball fan there is, but I'm going to tell you, I don't know if you agree with me or disagree with me. Baseball's tough to watch today. You know, I don't know who put that out that they took the juice out of the ball. I'll guarantee you, we can't count last year because of the pandemic, but I'll guarantee you, April 14th, 2021, doesn't have more home runs or will have more home runs than April 14th, 2019. I mean, I watch baseball, as you do, and I'm so sick and tired of every game being three or four home runs hit. And now, what, Acuña, is that how you say it, from Atlanta? What, he hit one 485 feet the other night?
Yeah, he did.
And the ball's not used? Come on. Why do they keep giving us that baloney as fans? I'm just a fan just like you are. But baseball is ridiculous. I mean, just... if you don't hit home runs, you don't win. It's just amazing how many guys aren't worried about getting hits. They aren't worried about a batting average. They aren't worried about getting two out singles with a man on second or a man on third. All they worry about is hitting home runs. And I'll tell you why. Because the owners have convinced the players that if you hit 20 to 30 home runs, you're going to make $15 million a year or more. And they're willing to give up batting averages, RBI opportunities, things like that to hit home runs to make more money. It seems like there's only a handful of teams, Rick, I don't know how you feel about this, that really give a damn about winning.
Yeah, Pete, it happens in the NBA too. But I'll tell you, I was thinking of you too the other day. I was going to text you, Aaron Boone, and obviously your connection to the Boone family from Cincinnati. Yeah. He has to have a press conference because he said Aaron Judge, who had a couple of homers today, he had some soreness on the side after five games because of all the at-bats he took. And I said, well, oh, my God, they're putting this manager in a position where he's got to talk to the media about Judge, who, by the way, wants $300 to $400 million in the number one media market, and they had to shut him down after five games, Pete.
That's why the Yankees are going to struggle. The Yankees got great personnel, okay? But it seems like every year, Judge and Stanton will play 130 to 135 games. The schedule is 162 games, okay? Can you imagine me missing a game because I have a sore ankle? I wouldn't miss a game if I had a broken ankle and I'm in a cast. But, I mean, these we'll never get to this, Brick, but if you walk in your clubhouse and there's a sign on the wall that says, if you play today, you get paid. These players would never take days off. They would never take days off, and they would get mad at the manager if he ever took them out of the lineup. Because they don't have to play. They're signing all these multi-year – and I'm not opposed to players making millions of dollars. because you're as good as you can negotiate, okay? But you owe it to your fans to go out there and play every day, whether you have a headache or whether you have the flu or whatever. Unless you can't play the game, then you don't play. But you can't miss game after game because you got a sore back or you got a sore shoulder or you got a sore ankle. I mean, what is baseball coming to? I thought these guys were tough, but there's just not enough tough players out there today. And there's a lot of bad teams, as you know. And I'm not criticizing baseball now on your show, okay? Mm-hmm. But you know, and I know, there's more bad teams than there are good teams. We could count the good teams on one hand or maybe two at the most. And there's 30 teams in baseball. So that means there's 20 bad teams. Think about it, Jay. I mean, you know who all the bad teams are. I mean, it's just amazing that even the bad teams have high salaries. Owners don't understand, you know, why does Chicago fill up every day? Okay, why don't Cincinnati fill up every day? Why don't Pittsburgh fill up every day? Why do Yankees fill up every day? Why do the Cubs fill up every day? They do it right, but there's too many teams that do it wrong. You have to give the fans a reason to come to the ballpark, and once they get there, you got to give them a reason to keep coming back. You know, what's the sense of playing baseball if you got 8,000 people at the game? Well, I know now because the pandemic, but if some teams got 40,000, 45,000, then this team's got 8,000 or 10,000. They're not doing a good job. They're not selling their players. You have to have fans. You have to have fans. And the ratings in baseball are going down. They're not going up. You know, the World Series last year was one of the lowest rated World Series ever. Okay? Why is that? Because I don't think the lords of baseball, if you want to call them that, they don't know what the hell they're doing. They put a man on second in an extra inning game. What's that all about?
I mean, I wanted to lead you right into that. Could you imagine Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, Johnny Bench, George Foster making the last out of an inning? Sparky saying, "Go out to second base. Go out to second base. You're the lead runner." And this is where I couldn't wait to ask you because, okay, we got to deal with this. We both don't like it, but I'm watching a game early with the Yankees, and you don't bunt the runner over. There's a man on second, extra innings. You're the home team. The road team didn't get a run. You win the game with a base hit. Do you bunt the runner over to third, Pete, and win on a sacrifice fly? What's the philosophy?
I don't know what the philosophy is because a guy, you're going to send a guy up there to try to make an out to get the guy to third. So make an out and bunt him to third. And then the infield comes in, and you got so many different ways to score a run. They just won't bunt them over. You don't see many teams. I guess Philadelphia does because of Girardi, but there's not that many teams that sacrifice today. The sacrifice bunt. What happened to the sacrifice bunt? What happened to the hit and run? You know, Philadelphia is the only team that hits and runs. I mean, I just don't get it. But what these men are they scared to ask a player to bunt them over? Because you can't get the headlines of getting a base hit or hitting a home run. You know, and I know, and the players ought to know, and the managers ought to know, you got more ways to score with a man on third and one out, okay, than a man on second, no outs. I mean, it's just common sense. You got to have belief in the hitter that's coming up. What are you going to say? They're going to put the next two on and have the bases loaded? Good. Then you can score three or four runs in the inning. Or how about breaking up a double play? How about sliding into a catcher? How about pitching inside as a pitcher? You can't pitch inside once you get warned. That takes the inside pitch away from you. The rules, I don't know who's changing these rules in baseball, but 1869 when baseball started, it was a pretty good game. And now they start changing it. They sit in New York and figure out a way to change another rule for next year. Is that Joe Torre? Who is that, this head of the rules committee?
Yeah, and on top of it, Rob Manfred's approving all of this. Pete Rose joins us on his birthday, the all-time hit king. Hey, Pete, on a positive note, because you're so positive about baseball, I compare Mike Trout to you all the time. I'm out west. You're in L.A. We're both in Vegas. Most of the country doesn't see Trout. The games start at 10:30 Eastern. Yeah. It's midnight. Next thing you know, Mike Trout's got two more at-bats. He plays as hard as you played. He's putting up numbers that will compare with you and the all-time greats, and they don't market him. We don't talk enough about him unless he has a two-home run game and a couple of doubles.
Well, that's the disadvantage of playing on the West Coast. The only thing I don't like about Trout, JT, and you'll understand this, you know, when you're a good player like him, and he's one of the who's the best player in baseball, him or Betts? Mookie Betts is pretty good. Okay, yeah. But the difference in Mookie Betts and Mike Trout is Mookie Betts' team gets to the playoffs, gets to the World Series. Anaheim never seems to get to the next step. And when you got a player as good as Trout, he's got some Rendon's on that team, Pujols is on that team. I mean, he's got some good players on that team. Otani is on that team. So he's got some pretty good players, but he just can't lead them to the promised land. I don't understand that. You know, Mookie Betts was in the World Series last year. He was a good teammate in Boston. He does everything except hit as many home runs as Trout. You know, the difference in me and Trout are home runs. You know, I scored runs. I played defense. But I won game. And I had a good supporting cast. Matter of fact, I was part of the supporting cast when Bench was playing, when Morgan was playing, when Perez was playing. So you got to have good teammates, which Mike Trout does. And he's got a good manager in Joe Maddon. He won the World Series a couple years ago with Chicago.
Yeah.
But they just it seems like the Anaheim Angels don't know how to spend money. Okay, when's the time they signed a really, really good pitcher for a long-term contract? I can't remember any. You can't win, JT, if you don't have pitching and if you don't have defense. You've got to have pitching and defense to win games because every team in baseball, you know this, they score every night because of the home run. And I know a lot of these new ballparks are all bandboxes. I mean, it's a joke to play in Cincinnati. It's a joke to play in Houston. It's a joke to play in Philadelphia. Atlanta's new ballpark's a joke. Right center field at Yankee Stadium is a joke. There are so many small ballparks and bigger athletes. Do you agree with that?
I agree 100% with it, and that's a trend that's not going to change because they want more entertainment in the ballpark. They want to move the game quicker. And again, you know I do a lot of radio. And we talk a few times a year, and I can't believe that Major League Baseball is in such a rush, Pete, to get everybody out of the ballpark. I get you don't want a four-hour Yankee-Red Sox game for TV. I get that. But now coming off COVID and a pandemic and trying to get butts in the seats again, everybody's trying to move it. Everybody's looking at their watch. You and I have talked. You've been watching games, and when you go to games, you look at people looking at their phone. They had to put nets up down the foul line because they're worried about people not watching the game. And you talk to a lot of fans, Pete. What do they say to you about the modern era of baseball compared to the era you played in?
It seems like the biggest controversy for fans in baseball is baseball don't know how. They don't know how to make the game faster. I mean, you can't have a fast game, Jay, if every pitch, every player steps out of the box to readjust his batting gloves. Okay? Get some batting gloves that you don't have to adjust every pitch. I mean, but fans are fickle in this way, okay? When you pan in the audience like you just talked about, fans are doing one of two things I see, and I watch two games every day. They're either on their phone or they're eating. Okay? And fans will complain about the price of tickets. It costs too much to go to a baseball game. Well, baseball is the best bargain in sports because they play 81 home games. Okay, basketball plays 41. Hockey plays 41 home games. But it costs you a lot to go to the game if you're going to drink three beers and eat four hot dogs. The people who make out are the concessionaires. Now, I don't know how they can do it, JT, but I'll tell you how to speed up the games. Because every umpire has his own strike zone. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm like you. I watch games every night, and I got more at-bats and more hits than anybody in the history of baseball. I cannot figure out the strike zone anymore in baseball. Everybody's got their own strike zone. You know, all these players come up, and they got the uniform pants down around their ankles, okay? How you make the game faster is just tell umpires to call more strikes. Sure, you'll have more arguments. But once, you know, when I used to play, JT, and right before the game, the four umpires walk out from underneath the stadium, and there's one guy that's got a mask in his hand. Now, that's the guy that's going to be behind Poit. Now, I know him, okay? Is he a high ball umpire? Is he a low ball umpire? Is he a pitcher's umpire? Is he a hitter's umpire? Is he a good umpire? Is he a bad umpire? And all I want him to do is do what he does on a consistent night. Just like the night before I broke the record, Lee Wire, okay, umpire had passed away. He was at first base. And he looked at me and said, Petey, he said, you'll break that record tomorrow night. I said, how you know, Lee? He said, because you'll be swinging because I'm behind home plate. And he was a pitcher's umpire.
Wow.
He was absolutely right. If Dutch Renner was back there, his strike zone's about 12 inches. Okay, so you can be more patient. But if you know an umpire's going to call a lot of strikes, you're not going to screw around. You're going to try to get a pitch to hit and get out of there. And the only way you're going to speed up the game is umpires calling more strikes. Because there's too many players up there that just take too many pitches, and that and there's so many pitching changes today because no one goes 8 or 9 innings. Every time you have a pitching change, to, JT, you have time added on to the time of the game. Like, hell, we had a couple games last year in September where 12 pitchers were used on both teams. How can you have a two-hour game? You can't. Baseball's got to figure out a way to speed up the game because people got other things they want to do with their life. You know, but there again, fans are fickle in this respect. Mm-hmm. If you're a Red Sox fan, you go to the game tonight, okay, and they lose 1-0, you're pissed off on the way home. You come back tomorrow night, and the game took 2 hours that night. You're mad on the way home. You come back the next night, and the Red Sox win 15-2, and the game took 4 hours. You're happy on the way home.
Right.
Fans are hard to please.
Pete Rose joins us on his birthday. What a tremendous honor. We'll get to some more with Pete here. Pete, I wanted to ask you, because since 2000, a lot of your peers, your friends, legendary Hall of Famers have passed away. Yeah. And I'm going to go down a list of a few of them, and I'd like your comments, not only on your friendship, but the impact that they had as baseball players and what it was like to compete against. I have to start with the king, Henry Aaron.
Well, I remember my first All-Star game, JT, was in Minneapolis in 65. And I'm just a kid, my first All-Star game. And I get to the ballpark for the workout on Monday, the game's on Tuesday. And the clubhouse guys got me locker in between Mays and Aaron. And I just slapped myself, what the hell am I doing here? You know, Willie Mays and Hank Aaron. And I'll never forget Henry and Willie because they both treated me like I was part of the team. They didn't treat me like I was a young kid. First time being in an All-Star game. And Henry always was very friendly to me. But they all had the same trait, JT. You know, Henry, Willie, Roberto, usual. They always want to talk about hitting the young players. They always try to make the game better. And there was no one better than Hammer and Hank. And in those days, you could, you know, during batting practice, you know, fraternization rule, so you could stand out behind the cage and watch the opposition hit and talk to the opposition as taking batting practice. You know, and a lot of times, I mean, my 17 All-Star games, Hank was probably there most of the years, and Willie was probably there most of the years I was at the All-Star game. And we won 16 out of the 17 All-Star games.
Good to hear his voice again. And I'm going to miss Pete. Going to miss picking up the phone and texting him, calling him, and having him call me out of the blue. Pete Rose had a massive impact on my life. I wouldn't call him a particular hero. Okay, Reggie Jackson, Thurman Munson, growing up as a kid, the memories I have of Pete Rose, and to build a friendship with him and to be able to talk with him and share that with you is just something I'll cherish the rest of my life. The all-time hit king. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show. Rich Gannon, our conversation with Eric Allen from earlier in the week. On Devontae Watch or not, big week coming up here. A lot of Raider viewing parties. I'll get to that as we wrap it up here on the flagship of the Raiders, Raider Nation Radio. All right, final segment of the show. Bobby and I are here, and we want to thank Alex and Orlando DeCastaverde, the DeCastaverde Law Group, the best. The brothers win. The brothers have your back. And there's a lot of attorneys in this town who bloviate and tell you how great they
or the DiCastroVerde Law Group does not do that because they have a proud legacy based on their father. And when they talk, people listen. And if you get into an accident and you need help, they're the gentleman to call, 702-222-9999. We talked to Rich Gannon earlier in the week. He was at the torch with us. He's been very active with the Raiders this season on our show, Raiders Roundtable.
Former MVP Rich Gannon, who joins us. And Rich, it was great to see you at the torch yesterday, and you nailed it. You said to everybody a couple of the role players, a couple of the backups would have to come in and have big games, and they did.
You know, I said also, JT, I thought it was one of those games where, you know, it was more about talent and it was going to be more about effort and energy and finish and, you know, doing little things that don't require a ton of talent, like flying around to the football and just, you know, I just think playing to a certain style. And without two of their best players on the field yesterday, I saw that from the Raiders. I thought that was an impressive win. I mean, their second double-digit comeback win of the season. I thought they showed some real resiliency, real fight. The other thing that was really apparent that you don't always get when you're not in the stadium, the emotion from the players on the sidelines. You know, after a big play, after a sack, after a score, half the team running onto the field or down the sidelines chasing players. And I just thought that was awesome. That sack at the end of the game on 4th and 3 from the 9-yard line, the Raiders sideline erupted with emotion. And that's how important that moment, that game was for them. And to me, that says something about that football team.
Yeah, Rich, I think you're right about that. The coaches deserve a lot of credit. I thought the theme yesterday was speed, right? Without Devontae, that, you know, guy's going to be a winner, go jacket pretty soon. I thought they really utilized the speed of this football team to kind of get this team going, right?
I couldn't agree more, EA. And I think when you're struggling running the football, I think Luke Getsy did some good things. I mean, Trey Tucker, DJ Turner, those two rushing touchdowns, those end-arounds, some trickery and just different ways to get some speed onto the perimeter. They called a couple shot plays down the field, and that's you know the one constructive criticism I'd have for Gardner Minshew. He missed a couple big throws yesterday that could have been gut jabs for the Cleveland Browns. And that's, you know, you realize you don't get a lot of those opportunities in a game. When you have them open, you have to hit them. But I thought they did some great things. Rushing the football, we've been talking about that all season, 152 rushing yards. What continues to be a concern for me through the first month of the season have been the slow starts on offense. I mean, it's just like in the first quarter, we're just dragging our feet in the mud and we just have a difficult time getting off to good starts. It seems like we have to constantly come from behind. And that's not a good thing. We've got to figure out a way to get off to good starts early in games.
You know, Rich, I don't have a problem going with the hot hand. It happens in baseball where you pull a pitcher in the fourth inning if he doesn't have it. You got two running backs here. Zamir White, if he doesn't get off to a good start and Madison is proving that he has fresher legs, what do you think about this going forward? Because there are two distinct rushing styles here, and it's too important for the Raiders to wait for one guy to get going when the other guy's hot.
I think Madison has the hot hand right now, and if it were me, I'd make sure he's on the field a little bit more. I mean, it was disappointing when Zamir put that ball on the ground and came in a critical situation, and of course, it got the Browns back in the game, but not just from that standpoint. I love the way Alexander Madison's running right now. He's running hot. I think he's running with a purpose. I think he's one of those old-school backs, JT, that the more opportunities and touches and carries he gets, the better he gets, and I think he's the type of back that can wear down a defense. I saw him do it in Minnesota and other places. And I just think that, you know, he's got the hot hand right now. I think he's seeing it better, you know, when you look at how they're blocking it up front. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him get some more touches the next couple of weeks.
Rich, it was great seeing that offense run the ball and being effective like that. But we had issues coming into this season about defensively stopping a run. And for the first time, they really did a good job, particularly after that first drive, of stopping a run and keeping Cleveland under 100 yards for the first time this year as a defense. What do you think about that?
I was so impressed by what I saw from the defense yesterday. I thought they just played with great effort and intensity throughout the course of the game, particularly in the second half. Again, they got off to a little bit of a slow start, but really settled in. Now, look at those final seven drives for the Cleveland Browns. 5 punts, guys, an interception, and they handed over on downs. I mean, just what an amazing finish for that Raider defense. And I look at what they did yesterday. You look at the numbers. Season low in points allowed, season low in rushing yards allowed, season low in total yards allowed, and a season high of three sacks. So when you do that without your best player on the field, I think that you're making progress. And I can't say enough good things about the job that Patrick Graham has done, really going back to last season when AP took over and how they – you know, the scoring was down, the mistakes, the penalties were down, the yards per game were down, and I think we're seeing a continuation of that this year. I just think he's one of the better defensive coordinators in the business, and he probably doesn't get enough of credit for the job he has done with this Raider group.
You know, Rich, Deshaun Watson came out, and he was great on that opening drive, and they went the length of the field, and he couldn't miss. I'm sitting there with EA going, what's going on here? Are we going to make this guy look like a Hall of Famer? But the adjustment were critical. You've been in the locker room for halftime adjustments, especially obviously on the offensive side. When that goes down at halftime, what is that like when you have to listen, you have to turn the script? I thought the Raider defense did a tremendous job with their halftime adjustments.
Yeah, we talked about the final seven drives of the game. I mean, the Raiders dominated, and I think a couple things really. I think keeping Deshaun Watson contained, I think where he really hurt the Raiders yesterday was when he got outside the pocket. You know, I think he realizes the protection is not going to be great. He does a good job trying to draw the rush and then finding a crease. We saw him run for a couple first downs yesterday. I thought in the second half they did a much better job with the controlled rush lanes, guys being disciplined with their gap assignments, guys being disciplined with their eyes and hands, and really forcing him to kind of step up and function as a pocket passer. That's always the key with a quarterback like Deshaun Watson. Force him to sit in there and make the accurate throws down the field. That's always been a challenge for him. But I just was really, to me, being there yesterday, guys, I don't know if you know this, but I was with you guys before the game. I sat in the alumni box for part of the game, and then I went out in the stands. They had a security guy there.
Come with me.
My daughter and my son-in-law were there. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go sit out in the stands. So I sat out there with Raider fans. It was awesome. A little distracting. I'm getting people want to get pictures and autographs, but I'm watching the game. I watched it from the end zone, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And just to feel the energy in the stadium. But as I said to you earlier, what really stood out to me, and you don't see this when I watch the games live, is you don't see the sideline eruption. You don't see the emotion from the coaches and the players. And to me, that's really what stood out yesterday. I just thought that was an important win for the Raiders. Now the challenge is this. You know, we're 2-2. We've got ourselves to 500. You know, everybody's in the mix with the exception of the winless teams. But what are the Raiders going to do with this now? Are we going to take a step forward and a step back? Are we going to go on the road and beat the Ravens and come home and lose to Carolina? I mean, this can be a real building block. And I think that it's going to be important that the leaders on this team, the veterans, really share that message with the young players that, hey, this is a week-to-week business. I mean, just look what happened to the Buffalo Bills last night.
Yeah.
I mean, they beat Jacksonville by 37. They lose to the Ravens by 25. And that happened in the course of 1 week. I mean, look at the Jets. The Jets go to Tennessee, then they lose to a rookie quarterback at home in the Denver Broncos and Bo Nix. So it's a week-to-week business. I'm hopeful that this team has figured that out and that they come back next week and have their best stuff.
Yeah, I believe so, too. That's a big point, Rich. It's about coaching. It's about consistency. You love the fact that defensively, the defensive line, Adams and the rest of the gang, Snowden, those guys really stepped up and really perform when they needed to, particularly at the end of the football game. This coaching staff deserves a lot of credit, getting these guys ready to play without Max Crosby, and at the end of the game, making that kind of Max Crosby play, right? The strip sack to end the game. And that's kind of what we need. And that's what we're talking about, leadership. I think Spillane takes a big part of that because he has to be the vocal leader. Of course, he's a middle linebacker. Again, he's double-digit tackles for, I think, the fourth week in a row. He's up in the stands tackling guys. He's awesome. But it goes to what you're saying. This is an amazing opportunity for this team to, one, have a great win and then not do like they did against Baltimore, have another bounce back with another big win against Denver, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I also agree with what you said, EA, about the line play. I think that's really important. I think when you look at when the Raiders have played really well in stretches, they've gotten good line play on both sides of the ball. The defensive line, getting to the passers, stopping the run. I thought yesterday doing a good job opening up some holes in the running game, 152 rushing yards. That's a season high. That's something to build on. You know, giving Gardner Minshew some opportunities to set his feet and push the ball down the field a little bit. So to me, when the line play is good, I think when you look at the Raiders on the perimeter, I mean, we're really, I mean, you're like tight end position when we're healthy, the wide receiver position. I think we've got two running backs that are more than capable. I think when you look at our secondary, you mentioned the linebacker play with Spillane and those guys. I think we're good, but it really starts up front with the line play. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention one other thing. You talk about players making big plays. How about A.J. Cole yesterday, guys? We have two of the best kickers in the league.
That's right.
He's got four punts yesterday, two inside the 20. He averaged 58 yards per punt. I think his net was incredible. Yeah. I mean, special teams were a big part of that win yesterday. And it's nice to know in your back pocket. You know, yeah, you remember when we had Shane Lechler and Sebastian Janikowski, when they really settled in, that was a real weapon. A.J. Cole dramatically changed field position yesterday for the Raiders.
All right, Rich, this is the elephant in the room. It's third down and short passes. I cannot believe the struggle at the quarterback position on third and two, third and three, when they're not going to run it, and I'm happy they're not running it because they've been struggling with it until this last game. What would you do moving the quarterback, making it easier for Gardner Minshew? I think he's better outside the pocket. I think some sprint rights and some throwbacks to Bowers when Devontae comes back. I'm just talking 3 to 6 yards, these little pitch and catch plays, and the Raiders really struggle with that on third down, and it's a problem, and it's not cleaned up yet.
Yeah, third down has to be better. I think certainly the plan has to be adjusted. I think you have to look at what we're doing well. I think you have to figure out ways to get, you know, the quarterback in a position. I think his feet at times have been compromised, and I think part of that is just coaching and fundamentals and getting back to repping things over and over again. I think when he sets his feet, he can be very accurate. I think when his feet are a little jittery and he's moving around and he doesn't quite trust the protection, that's where he misses throws. You know, he missed a big throw down the field yesterday. I can't remember. One was to Turner and one was to Tucker. I mean, you know, opportunities for big plays, and he just overthrew both of them. And I think a lot of it has to do with his feet. But, you know, the other thing I would say is, you know, when you look at the plan, like that last drive of the game, the last offensive drive of the game, I almost got sick as I was sitting there in the stands. It was awful. I mean, the first play, the toss play, we lose like 3 or 4 yards. Yeah. We give the ball back to the Browns with three timeouts left and some pretty good field position. They drive down the field. That could have ended the wrong way yesterday. And I think what's disappointing for me from an offensive standpoint, you can't give the Browns that opportunity. You have to be able to finish the game on offense. We talk about the importance of closing a team out. All they had to do was make a couple first downs. They weren't able to do that. And to go three and out in that situation was not a good moment for that Raider offense.
Rich, at the end of the game yesterday, I thought that offensively, you know, the theme was speed. Defensively, I thought it was just relentless effort and attitude. Have we carved out an identity, you think?
I'm hoping so, EA. I just think for the Raiders, it's all about consistency. Like consistency every day you walk in the building. Consistency in terms of what we do in the weight room, what we do in the practice field, what kind of copious notes we take in the meeting room. You know, how much studying are we doing at night? And are we coming back and are we bringing it each and every day? Forget about Sundays just for a second. Let's make sure we're doing the little things it takes during the week to be successful. But I just think when you look at your body of work on game day, it's got to be all about effort and finish. And I just think for the Raiders, I want to see the consistency. I can't see them go on the road and beat up on the Ravens, which is a really good football team, and then come back the next week and not play well at home in the home opener against the Carolina Panthers. So to me, I just want to see them start stacking together consistent performances day in and day out, week in and week out. That's what Raider fans are craving. I'm just telling you, I sat in those stands yesterday. It was awesome. I can't remember the last time I sat in the stands at a Raider game. And, you know, it bothers me. I'm honestly sitting there in the end zone. I've got all these Raider fans around me. To my left, I got a bunch of Browns fans. I'm like, uh-oh. What are you doing here?
Uh-oh.
So that'll change. And you know what'll make a change? Not just the winning, but the consistent winning. And that's what Raider fans are craving.
Well, Rich, thank you so much. I'm going to talk to Mark Davis with EA. Send that private jet to get you.
That's right.
Every home game. And get that
hey, man, I'm just telling you. I'm going to put my suit and tie on every time the Raiders win, man. I can't wait. I'm going to wear this thing out before it's all over.
There you go. You're looking good.
I'm back. The great Rich Gannon joining us. Always good to have him.
Thanks to the great Rich Gannon. Thanks to you for the entire week, everybody who listened and participated. Bobby, we got to get some lunch. We got to do something. I'm headed to the Syracuse game, maybe a little tailgate before we get going here. If you're going to the game, I hope to see you. Q Myers, big monster show coming up as he always does on Friday. Thanks for listening all week, and thanks to all of our proud partners on the flagship of the Raiders, Raider Nation Radio.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.